Hello, hello. We're back again with another episode of the Soulfully Stronger podcast. I'm your host, Ari, back here again, and we're going to talk about my favorite thing in the world, my dog today. So there you go. Today's topic is 4 beautiful life lessons I have learned and really dug into since adopting my pup. So just for a little background, Connor and I adopted Jade, who is our sweet baby that we are absolutely obsessed with. If you guys know me personally, you know that I also have an Instagram account for her because I did in fact become a crazy dog mom once I got her. And I didn't understand that whole thing prior to getting her, like the whole dog mom thing and like people being obsessed with their dogs and whatever. And like, I grew up with dogs. Obviously, I love dogs. I'm a big animal person, but I still didn't really get the whole like making a dog Instagram or things like that until I got Jade. Then I was like, absolutely, she will have an Instagram. She is the moment. We love it. So, needless to say, absolutely crazy about my dog. But my dog is a special kind of dog. So we did adopt her at our local humane animal shelter, whatever. And it was kind of one of those situations where we had talked about like, oh, we would love to get a dog, but we weren't exactly sure. At the time, Connor was applying for a job he had been really wanting that at the time was fully remote and kind of still is at this point. And so we're like, oh, that would be perfect, because then if there are any like hiccups with like getting the dog, like if they're not fully house trained or like things like that, you know, somebody's going to be home with the dog. It's not like they're going to be, you know, alone all day, that sort of thing. So we found out that the initial dog we were looking at was like this little tiny like basset hound, super cute, put in an application. We found out like 2 days later that the dog had already been adopted. But they were like, hey, if you're still interested in a dog, we have visitation hours on Friday from 12 to 4. If you want to come and kind of check out the dogs we have, because they're still operating on like a limited schedule with COVID, where they, you can't just like stop in or anything. So we're like, okay, I guess we'll do that, like yada, yada, yada. So then on Friday, we're getting ready to go, and I'm like so excited because I'm like, okay, we're going to get a dog. And Connor's like, you know, maybe we'll see, like, you know, kind of trying to be more realistic and stuff. But I'm like, all right, we're puppy proofing the house. Like, I'm coming home with a baby today. But I was trying to just be okay with if we didn't find a dog, you know, it isn't, you know, it is what it is. So we go in, we find out that they're having a special adoption event, which they have from time to time because of like overcrowding and that sort of thing. So then, you know, more dogs get adopted and like different companies sponsor it. Like it's like a whole thing. So we go there and they're like, hey, we're actually not doing our 12 to 4 time frame. We're running this event and it starts in like an hour. So like, just come back. So we go home. We're thinking things over. We go right back. We're like trying to be first in line. We're like so excited to go see these dogs. So then they let us in. We go back into the kennels where all the dogs are, and like all the dogs are going nuts, right? They're so excited. There's all these people coming in, you know, they're all wagging their tails and barking, looking so cute. My eyes instantly zero in on this dog in the corner who is curled up in a ball. The only dog that's not like standing out and barking, and like you can see her eyes and she looks absolutely terrified. Like, it was so heartbreaking to see, and I could not leave her. Like, that was the very first dog I walked up to. I don't even remember seeing a single other dog there, like, where I was, like, looking at the dog, like, in it, you know, like, oh, look at this dog type of thing. Like, I zeroed in on her, and I was just like, oh, my God, this poor baby. Like, she needs to get out of here. I cannot leave without taking her. I was like, this is really bad, because, like, not only was she not a small dog, because keep in mind, we live in a one-bedroom apartment, very small, and so, like, getting a big dog was kind of not really in the equation. We were thinking, like, you know, a 30-pound or less, you know, smaller to maybe medium small-sized dog, and Jade is a almost 60-pound pit bull, so she is a big dog. Now, in her kennel, she did look kind of small because she was so, like, curled up and, like, little. And I was just, like, looking at her, and I was like, oh, my God, I need to take her. Like, I'm going to cry if I don't get to take her home. And so then Connor walks over to me because he had been looking at the other dogs, like, walking down. We kind of went different ways. And I was like, Connor, I can't leave without her. Like, we need her. Like, she needs to be our baby. And so then one of the animal shelter, like, workers was like, hey, do you guys want to go, like, play with her out in the backyard and just kind of see, like, if she'd be a good fit, that sort of thing. So we take her out there, and she's incredibly timid. Like, she's walking really low to the ground, and she'll just, like, sit, and she's moving, like, super awkwardly. Like, you can tell she's incredibly anxious. But overall, she looked very calm and chill. So then Connor and I were like, okay. And she started to warm up to me. And so that was good. And you could tell she was just super overwhelmed by everything there. When we talked to the folks at the shelter, they said, you know, she was one of their older dogs there. Not like old as in age, but she had spent a long time at the shelter. And that she was deteriorating pretty bad. In the shelter, she did have, like, a foster parent for a little while to help, like, kind of alleviate the stress of being at the shelter. But that person was, like, a student, and so they couldn't keep her for much longer because of something with school. So, like, the poor baby was just not doing well at the shelter. And I was just like, okay, we're taking her. And then Connor was sold, and it was what it was. And we're like, okay, she is a big dog, but she's so timid and quiet. Like, it'll be fine. Like, you know, we'll be whatever. Of course, by the time we get home, she livens up a lot more. And as days go on, we finally get to see her true personality. They like sent us home this paper that basically was like, yeah, dogs will, like, you know, within 3 days, they're going to be more comfortable with you. That within 3 weeks, they're going to be even, you know, it's like this whole thing because they're, like, adjusting to you, whatever. That was definitely the case for Jade, because her personality went from this timid, shy little dog to this super energetic, happy, bubbly, sweet little baby. And so as much as we love her and we have so much fun with her, there were some little hiccups that come with, you know, adopting a shelter baby. And we kind of knew going in, right? Like, you don't know the background of these dogs. You know, maybe they'll have a harder time being potty trained. Like, you don't know if there was abuse. Like, there's so many things. And we did find out that Jade was found as a stray, and they believe she was a stray for quite a while. And she was only 2.5 at the time we got her. So she wasn't socialized properly, that sort of things. And so she has, while she's an incredibly well-behaved dog in any other capacity, like, no accidents, easy to train, like, tricks with, like, she loves learning new tricks, and she's really good at picking them up. But she's horrifically reactive. Like, I had always grown up with dogs that we got as, like, puppies. And so we've always just been able to socialize them. So I've never, ever dealt with a dog that has reactivity issues. And it started out small. Like, at first I would take her for a walk. And we would walk, you know, at this time I was a student, so it was about, like, 5 a.m. that we'd be going on her first morning walk. And it was dark out and stuff. And so if she'd see somebody, she would stand guard in front of me and kind of bark at them. And I was like, okay, you know, maybe it's because it's dark out and she's pretty protective of me, that sort of thing. Nothing intense, but enough to be kind of be like, do not approach my mom, essentially. But then as time went on and she got more comfortable with us, then it became a bit more intense. And so, we were like, okay, now we got to look into all these trainings around dog reactivity training because it's pretty bad. Like, she doesn't like to look at other dogs. She doesn't like other humans. Like, you know, it's kind of a lot. So we have to be very careful when we're on walks with her and kind of aware of our surroundings, making sure that, you know, she's not in a bad place, blah, blah, blah. But the whole situation of it, I feel like I've gleaned a lot from it, and it's taught me a lot of important things, important just general life things that can be applied to any, you know, relationship, friendship, dynamic with other folks just in general. And I think that's a really awesome thing that I've been able to learn. So let's dive into it. Let's dive into four major things that I have learned after owning a reactive dog. And again, these are all framed of the mindset of my dog, but they're very much applicable to, like, again, all relationships, right? So the first one I have is you cannot put your own expectations and, like, desires of what you want onto somebody else and hope that they fulfill that, right? Like, it would not be fair of me to, you know, just hope that at one point through reactivity training, Jade is going to be a happy-go-lucky dog that wants to go up to every person for pets and loves playing with all other dogs and life is all good. Because I, in an ideal world, I would love that. Like, I would love to be able to take her to a dog park and trust that she can play with the other dogs, or even bring her around other people, like walking her downtown and, you know, that sort of thing. But even with good reactivity training with her to, like, help keep her safe and others safe, that is just not a reality that's going to happen, unfortunately. But it's something I have to just accept, right? Like, I have to just accept her as she is. She's a sweet, lovey baby. Unfortunately, the rest of the world won't always get to see that. You know, the whole goal with reactivity training is just that she's able to keep herself regulated in a mindful way, but it will never make her to where people can just come up off the cuff and start petting her or things like that. It'll just kind of help keep her a little bit more focused when we're on walks and that sort of thing. So, but this principle kind of goes for all things. I think particularly in relationships, like romantic relationships, where sometimes, you know, you may have an expectation of how you want your partner to show up. And I'm not talking about things that are just like basic standards. Like, I hope that they are caring for me. It's like, those are very basic things, but I'm talking more niche things, right? Like, oh, so-and-so's husband does this and I wish he was this, blah, 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 blah. Or even if it's just like a personality thing, like when you start like putting these expectations unfairly on other people, you miss seeing them as they are, right? You miss seeing them for the person that they already are, which is a beautiful thing. And especially when it comes to like a relationship, right? If you really love this person, there's clearly something about this person innately that is already enough. They don't need to be more. They don't need to bend more into what your expectations are. It's like they are fully, beautifully them the way that they are, right? And so we have to make peace with that, even with friends, right? I wish my friend did XYZ more, whatever it is. It's like, at the end of the day, if you love your best friend or you really like love your friends, whatever, you love them as they are, right? Like, if you met them and started building a relationship with them, it wasn't on the hopes, or shouldn't be on the hopes, that they will become something different than they currently are, right? We need to meet people where they're at, love them where they're at. Because again, that's beautiful. When we start doing the whole like projecting what we want onto them is unfair, right? It's an unfair standard to hold somebody to. And then it's also not fun, right? Like, it's then you're just kind of living in this world you've made in your own head, not necessarily embracing the world as it stands, you know? So yeah, so one thing I have, you know, really learned with having my sweet Jade in my life is, you know, you cannot expect others to show up in the way that is most convenient for you or most ideal for you. You know, sometimes you have to be okay with things not being that way, and that is equally as beautiful in its own way. All right. For the second thing I have learned since owning a reactive dog is understanding that you don't know somebody's past or how they got to where they are, right? With Jade, it's one big blank slate, right? You know, they told us at the shelter that she's likely about 2.5. They told us that she was likely a stray, potentially for most of her life. You know, nobody claimed her. She wasn't microchipped, none of that. So we have no idea what her past looks like, right? We don't know if she experienced any abuse, if she, you know, or if there's even trauma from just being a stray dog or just not having socialization that other, you know, dogs that are maybe adopted as puppies into loving homes would have to not be so reactive, you know? And the same goes for other people, right? And other relationships. It's the same thing. Like, we really do not know where people are coming from. You know, they may hold an opinion on something that you wholeheartedly disagree with, but their opinion may be informed by an insane experience they had as a child, right? Where it's like, oh, okay, even if I don't agree with you on that, it's like, wow, you know, that was, I can see why you believe that way. Or, you know, I can see why that is meaningful to you and it doesn't matter to me, or whatever the case may be. You know, unless you were literally attached at the hip with someone for their entire life, you just have no way of knowing, you know, where they are now and like how they got there, you know? So who are we to say, you know, there's just so much that can be honored there, right? We know that so much of our childhood and our upbringing impacts the way we live our life. It impacts the way we hold trauma in our body. It impacts the way we make decisions or have compromised abilities to make decisions. Or, I mean, there's so many things, and it's so hard to, you know, come with judgments or expectations again when, you know, you really don't know where how somebody got to a point, especially if it's somebody that you don't know intimately. Because I would even argue that in intimate relationships, we don't fully know, right? Like, we know what our partner or friend might share with us, but we don't know what they don't share, what they choose not to share. We also don't know how deeply those experiences impact us, right? For example, my parents are divorced. My parents' divorce, I'm gonna be honest with you, didn't really impact me. But for some people, it's wholeheartedly devastating. And as a kid, I remember it was really hard for me to understand when, like, friends of mine in school, like, you know, this is when I was a lot younger, but when friends of mine in school would be really upset about their parents' divorce, because I remember because of the situations in my life or whatever, I was very happy when my parents got a divorce. It was absolutely the right thing and maybe even should have been done sooner. You know, that's beside the point. But so it was very hard for me to understand, like, what the issue, what, like, why somebody would even be upset about that. And then also I was always just like, well, like, you know, what's the big deal? Like, it's not that big of a deal. But again, I was a kid, you know, I don't know. And so we don't know. So even when we know that somebody has an experience that's similar to ours and maybe it didn't impact us that much, we're like, okay, well, why are you blah, blah, blah about it? Like, we don't know why, you know, we don't know what the details of that were. So even when we think we, you know, share similar experiences, we still don't really know, you know, just like my situation with other people going through divorce as a child, you know, for some people, it's really, really impactful and really traumatizing. For other people like myself, it was just like, it was actually probably the best thing that could have happened for the situation. And I didn't feel any type of way about it, quite honestly. So, and that's just one example of many things, you know. And again, just reiterating that we don't know how somebody's past. We don't know how that affects them. We don't know how it affects them to this day. And just being mindful of that when we interact with other people, you know, we don't know fully what they're bringing to the table and how much they've let us in to even know that those sorts of things. All right. The third little tidbit or thing that I have learned since parenting a reactive dog, is having patience with those who are working on getting better or healing, right? Like with Jade, we've tried many, you know, I've tried different little, you know, I follow all these whatever Instagram dog accounts where they talk about, like, here's what you can do to help with reactive dogs, and like YouTube videos and the whole nine, because we've looked into like taking her to somewhere, and we think eventually we might end up doing that. It's just kind of expensive and we don't really have that type of money at the moment, but it might be a future thing. But anyway, we've been trying these little small tricks and things for when she's on walks to kind of reinforce good behavior, keep her kind of focused on me or on the road in front of us and less on other people that are walking by that kind of trigger her or whatever. And she does, you know, she's definitely gotten better than when, you know, the first few walks we've had with her with that. But she still, you know, struggles with that, right? Same thing with, she hates seeing people outside of our window. And so she goes nuts. And so now she's gotten to the point where she won't always bark. I mean, sometimes she does. Other times she'll make this like whimpering sound where you can tell she's trying so hard not to bark out loud. So she sounds almost like Courage the Cowardly Dog, where it's like her just like really trying to reel in that bark that I know she wants to let out. So she's definitely trying to be better about it. But we have to have patience with her, right? You know, if I was still getting mad at her because she's still doing these things or she's still occasionally lashing out in intense ways sometimes, it would negate all the progress she's made. And it's like, you know, these things take time, right? She went through years without being properly socialized and having a stable home. It's going to take more than a year or two for her to, you know, relearn these things. And so the same can be extended to others in our lives who are, you know, whether they are recovering from an addiction or healing, you know, working on healing anxiety or trauma or all these things, or even just working to become a better parent, a better partner, a better whatever. Those things take time, right? So you can have these honest conversations like, hey, when you do this, you know, it hurts my feelings, blah, blah, blah. But holding space for when they slip up inevitably, because we're creatures of habit. Sometimes we don't think about the behaviors or that we do or the words that we say, you know. So sometimes we need to have patience for those that are trying, right? Like nobody is going to be perfect right off the cuff, even if they try their hardest. So we got to hold space for people to make mistakes, right? If somebody, say for example, is like, you know, in recovery from an eating disorder, right? You know, maybe they're doing really well or making, you know, whatever their treatment plan is at that point in time. They start to have a little regression because something stressful happens or whatever the case may be. You know, it can be very easy as a family member or friend or partner to get very upset and to kind of come down hard, you know, put the hammer down as a way of like, you know, I really care about you and I'm angry because you're letting me down, you're blah, blah, blah. But it's like that person likely at that moment does not need that, A, because they're probably already really upset about it themselves, or they're probably already struggling clearly. So why are we going to go in and try to make it worse? But just holding space for the fact that anybody healing anything or trying to better themselves or try to work on things, there is going to be mistakes made, period. That's just life. Like it's just what it is. And we got to hold space for that. And also honor the fact that they're trying, you know, it's like one of my addictions counseling courses in college, we kind of like talked about that, right? Like oftentimes folks that do slip up in their recovery effort and experience that like very negative, harsh response of like, I can't believe blah, 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 blah. Whereas the, you know, the family member or friend or loved one who's saying that might be saying it out of caring, you know, kindness and feel like, you know, oh, we want to make sure you get set straight type mindset. What it ends up doing is just makes the person feel worse about themselves, which might make them just feel like giving up, which is like the opposite of what you want to do. You know, you want to feel like even in those moments of weakness, or in, I guess weakness wouldn't even be the right word, but mistakes or whatever, you're still held, right? You're still held by those that love you, and are, you're still supported, and you can get right back up again. You know, you don't have to stay down there, that sort of thing. So just the third one is just having patience for people that are healing or that are working on themselves or just wanting to do better, I guess. All right. The fourth and final little Zen tip or life tip or whatever I've learned from having a reactive dog is just being present and enjoying all the other beautiful things, right? Like, so often, anytime there's something that's an issue with anything, we dwell on that, right? Instead of just accepting all the, like, billions of other good things that are also there. So, right, with Jade, like, I could be upset that, you know, I don't get to take her to the dog park and hang out with other dogs, or I don't get to, you know, just walk her around downtown in our city or whatever, or do all these things because she just cannot handle it. And it's like insane for her to like do that. And it can be very frustrating at times. It really can be. But if I, you know, if I'm focused too much on that, I'm missing out on all the beautiful, awesome things I get to do with Jade. Like, first off, she's the coolest dog ever. She's such a sweet, lovey, silly baby. We do take her to the dog park by her house that nobody goes to, because nobody's there. So we still get to watch her run around and play and have fun. And we enjoy that time. She loves going on car rides, and she gets so happy to just feel the wind in her little like face and stuff. And so, you know, at the end of the day, I would not want her to be any other way, right? Because even though she has her little moments that are sometimes not easy to deal with, she like is the best dog ever, and we have so much fun with her, and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. And so just, I was like that with anything in life, you know, where it's a lot easier to hyperfixate on things that have gone wrong or that are rough in the moment. We also, you know, it's not healthy for us to just sit there, right? Just sit in the like stuff that really sucks. It's a lot healthier for us to do our best to try to see light, right? Try to see the positive things in life. And I know there are seasons of my own life where it's like, okay, there's literally nothing positive about life right now. And that's okay. And those times come too. But I think just as a general rule of thumb, just trying to reframe things in such a way that you're present with what is, accepting of what is, you know, maybe even having a neutral stance towards it, right? Doesn't need to be good, doesn't need to be bad, it just is. And then also, you know, taking time to enjoy those good times. And so, you know, even if it's a relationship situation where maybe you're in a rocky situation there, you know, obviously we're not talking about like abuse here, but I'm just saying, like, you know, if you're having just some issues with, you know, some type of argument or whatever that, you know, couples are bound to get into, that you remember, you know, that this isn't what it always is, and you're not so blindsided by it that you can't see, you know, the beauty of what is and what can be changed or what can be done to make things better, that sort of thing. So not a super long episode, especially compared to the previous episode. A little bit shorter here today. Just wanted to give you a few light, easy little tidbits on life advice. Plus, I get to talk about my dog, which she's kind of the best thing ever. And so that makes it even better. And I like to kind of mix up some longer episodes with some shorter ones because I have noticed that, like, usually around the half hour point, I tend to like lose folks, which is totally understandable. I'm just I don't even know what to describe myself as, but a person that really enjoys a long podcast. So I figured I would kind of switch it up a little bit, try to keep it varied. But yeah, so that is today's episode. I can't wait to see you guys all here next week. As always, thank you so much for holding this space for me, supporting me by watching. I really enjoy doing these sorts of things, even though sometimes I generally feel like they're not significant. It does make me feel good that people do watch it, that people are interested, that sort of thing. Or listen, I should say. But yeah, so that is all for this week's episode. Thank you again abundantly. I hope you all have a great rest of your week. Again, if you have any, you know, if you have any topics you want to see me cover in the near future, you can totally DM me at Soulfully Stronger Podcast on Instagram, which you can find down below. Same thing for my email. It's soulfullystrongerpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to email me a suggestion of a topic to cover, or if you have questions about things and you want me to kind of discuss my thoughts on them, I'm totally down for that. So send it my way. We'll make it happen. All right. Well, I hope you guys all have a great rest of your week. And as of now, that is all. Bye. Mm-hmm.